All right, welcome into a new Buff Stampede Radio. Adam Lester-Tiger, the publisher of BuffStampede.com, joined by football analyst again this week, William Gardner. William, it is the day after Dr. Martin Luther King Day. It is the day after the national championship. It's a day before the dates and opponents get announced for Colorado in the 2026 football season get announced by the Big 12. We know who they're going to be playing, just not exactly how that's going to lay out, especially from the conference slate in terms of the calendar. And then later today at 9 p.m. Mountain Time, Colorado is going to host Kansas at the CU Event Center for some men's basketball action. And we've got a lot of transfers to talk about. We're never at a loss for things to talk about on this show, are we?
Well, I don't know. There have been times, but this seems like, even though it seems sort of a dead point, there's a lot going on right now, so a lot to cover. I think it's been a pretty exciting couple of weeks, I would think most people would agree.
Yeah, and we'll get into that. We've been doing a show about every 5 days, and we've got a long list of new guys to talk about each time. And so I'm looking forward to that. As we allow some folks to join the live and get settled in, and hopefully we can get some good questions from the chat today. And we keep the infighting to a minimum, if possible. I want to get your thoughts on the national championship game. That was a pretty entertaining game. You know, the Hurricanes outgained Indiana, but that blocked punt, that pick late in the game, I mean, that was the difference.
Well, you know, that I remember having an argument with some idiot on our board years ago about the impact of a blocked punt. But statistically speaking, if you block a punt, you more often than not win the game. Because it changes the field and it changes the momentum of the game so much. But, people get too caught up on who gains what yardage and whatever, stuff like that. And at the end of the day, sometimes that matters, but a lot of times it really doesn't. You know, the game itself is really dictated by a lot of other things than that. And I think the better team clearly won. I think that semifinal game might have even been an even better game with Indiana. I think it was a great outcome. I'm glad to see an entirely different team win a national championship, aside from the the same 10 teams that we hear all the time. I think that this also, I think Indiana is a huge demonstration that coaching matters just as much as talent, and probably more, quite frankly. You got to have a certain minimum level of talent, but if you don't have the good coaching, you're not going to win. So a lot of things to take out of that. Everybody's going to want to try to copy Kurt Cignetti and whatever he does. I don't think they'll be able to do it because he's a unique personality. So we'll see. I don't know. It's a lot to take out of it.
Yeah, it does seem like Indiana is the exception to the rule in this portal era. I there's a lot of programs that haven't had a ton of success recently that are going to try to bank on that. But I mean, that's tough to do. I wish he would enjoy life a little bit more, but Nick Saban never seemed happy on the sideline either. Right.
Well, I don't care. Screw him. It's really not.
He just doesn't seem like Kurt Cignetti enjoys life very much. But
we sat here and watched the crap all the team with a guy on Thorazine on the sideline with Darrell, for God's sake. The guy didn't move, didn't change his facial expression, didn't react at all. I'd rather have it with Kurt Cignetti winning 16 games than with Darrell winning one.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, but I think
that fourth call play was ballsy as heck, man. And he knew he had the quarterback that was going to will himself to get that first down. And lo and behold, he finds the end zone.
Yeah. I mean, it's less gutsy when you know what your team is and you've trained them and you know what you've got. I mean, I think it's about with Cignetti, it's attention to detail and demanding excellence from everybody, including all of his staff and his players. And, when the coach believes in the players and the players believe in the coach, there's a lot of things you can get done,
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, in a game like that, with everything on the line, you're playing for the national championship, that's the call. I mean, I don't know. It's not like you got an angst over it to me.
It definitely tells your team that you believe in them. And sometimes that can be undervalued in terms of in moments like that, especially when you know that you've got your head coach that believes in that sense. So football game. It was great to see a non-SEC championship game, wasn't it?
Or yeah, I mean it was Big Ten, I guess, but not Ohio State, but or Michigan. So I think the other thing about that moment is, you know, there's really no point in having a conversation with the team because you've had those conversations and everybody knows, you know, like in great teams, whether it's football, military, whatever, you know, the bottom line is that nobody wants to be the one that lets the team down. So everybody's going to do their job and do it well, and you know they're going to do it, and so you have a very good likelihood of making that happen in that moment because everybody's going to step up.
All right. We've gotten quite a few folks that have joined in on the live. So let's dive into some Colorado talk and talk about some of the guys that have joined the herd since our last show. William, they're up to 43 scholarship transfer additions at the recording of this, 10:38 a.m. on Tuesday, January 20th. I feel like I need to put a timestamp on that because you never know. And I'll be kind of glancing over to Twitter a few times during this show. But we've talked about most of these guys. I'm going to keep going until we get to the first guy we have not talked about, and that's Richard Young, a running back coming in from Alabama. Very highly regarded coming out of high school. Alabama's ground game really struggled this past year. He was in the mix there. This is somebody that his – college production so far hasn't kind of matched up with the projected talent that he was expected to have or is expected to have going forward.
No, but I think, I've often wondered over the 40 some years of being part of football. And when you look at where guys commit to go to college, you know, did they make a mistake? Would they have done better if they'd have gone to a different place? But as one of our people on the Stampede board, who's from Bama, but talks about the Alabama team as a whole, nobody ran a ball worth a damn. So if you want to go by his yards per carry, that's no different than anybody else on that team. So they just struggled all the way around. But I look at the guy, he's got the talent. There's no indication that he didn't achieve because of attitude or lack of effort or whatever. And so to me, I've said many times that I never give up on a player until their eligibility's up, you know? So I think that the other thing to take into account for all of these players, and I think this is a larger picture thing that we need to discuss is that it's very clear and it's come through from various sources that Coach Prime has watched film on every single one of these guys they've taken. And if they're taking a running back like Richard Young, it's because Brennan Marion wants that guy, okay? Brennan Marion knows what his offense is about. He knows who's going to be successful in it. Doesn't mean he's going to be right all the time. But I think if Brennan Marion wants this guy, then that means he thinks that this guy has something to add to the offense. But, you know, at 5'11", 212, with speed and agility, and this guy is going to do a lot at one of those running back positions, I believe. You know, like I've said several times with the go-go offense, he seems to like to have one bigger guy and one really smaller, speedy guy. So this fits that mold definitely. And I think Richard Young comes in here again with, like we've said before, with a chip on his shoulder and something to prove, stepping into an offense that I think is really going to feature running backs.
We got a question from Paul Noto, 7757 in the chat. Adam, do we have to be concerned with Ezra Christensen ninth signing yet? And Jerry Rooster 22 responded, Ezra signed last night. It was kind of a weird deal. William, there was a tweet about Ezra Christensen signing and it got removed. I need to look into this. This was just brought to my attention this morning. So I'm gonna look into that. I wouldn't freak out yet because we don't know what's going on there. But
I wouldn't freak out at all. I wouldn't freak out at all, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know. You know, we got a bunch of guys. I think Ezra Christian's one of the better guys in this class, but I don't see any indication that he's leaving or going somewhere else. So, you know, I think people need to breathe into a paper bag sometimes. You know, just don't create things that don't exist until they exist, because something will happen sooner or later.
The Corkman said Sig and Cristobal talked about culture on ESPN with Reese Davis. And then he followed up Prime, quote, we don't care about culture. I just think that's a tomato-tomato thing. Prime's talked about mentality. I think he just doesn't like that word culture for some reason. But he understands the significance of like he said, after the season, what was wrong in 2025 was our mentality. That it's kind of culture, right? I mean, it's not that far off from each other.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I guess we're going to talk about all the other little stuff then. To me, people throw around people that don't know football throw around words like culture and all that kind of garbage. And at the end of the day, Coach Prime has proven that he knows about culture, because after season one, that was the problem, that team didn't have cohesion and togetherness. And so going into season two, when they went into the portal, they were very clear that they were looking for a different kind of guy, you know, and looking for Shane, like a Shane Cokes as a leader, and guys that are looking for that have a chip on their shoulder and want to be part of a team instead of just chasing. Now, that worked out well in 2016 or in 2024, and then they seemed to forget it last year, you know. So they went to the portal and took just a bunch of guys, and this year he's realized again that it matters who you bring into your program and why and what they bring to the table. And so what we've brought in this portal, to me, it looks like a bunch of guys that are leaders on their teams. And I'm very confident that, you know, part of the conversation with each one of these guys is how do they fit into the locker room and how do they, you know, fit with their teammates and all that kind of thing. So these controversies are made up controversies. I know Coach Prime said he doesn't believe in culture, but he believes in something, and he understands football, and he's been around long enough to know that what goes on in the locker room and what goes on in the huddle makes a difference on the field in terms of the outcome. And so he's addressing that in this particular portal. He's addressed that with his coaching staff choices. Brennan Marion clearly understands what culture is and brings it on offense. And I'll take you back to 1984, I guess, or 80, you know, in the offseason between 84 and 85, when Coach Mack put in the wishbone offense, people could say, well, what, you know, that only affects the offense. Well, Coach Mack McCartney, I can't get them all. There's too many coaches in CU in the last 30 years. But Coach McCartney talked often after that about that not only did the wishbone make a huge impact on the offense, but it made a tremendous impact on the defense, because suddenly you in practice every day were facing a punch you in the mouth, hard hitting offense. And then you had to become that same thing in defense just to stand up to it in offense. So, or in practice. So I think that bringing in a hard nosed offense and a hard nosed offensive coordinator is going to help rub off on the defensive players as well, you know. And so they're going to have to try to stop that thing in practice, and it's going to be a downhill running game, and they're going to have to get smart about it. So I think it will make a big difference all the way around. And I think that whether he wants to say the word culture or not, I think he's addressing it, Coach Prime, that is.
That's good stuff. One thing, and we'll get back to these guys that are joining the program. We'll get back on track here. You mentioned practice. One thing I would like to see, William, with this program going forward is more good on good, more ones versus ones, because yeah. I do think that helps build that mentality a little bit. And kind of Coach Prime's in the NFL, you can go twos, V's, ones, and there's not a huge drop off. And if you've got great depth in college at certain positions, maybe not, but like you need those alpha dogs on both sides of the ball going head to head day after day to really.
Yeah.
I hate that iron sharpens iron. That's way too overused, but there is some truth in being able to, like, I remember back in high school, my basketball coach said, don't go to the park and play against bad basketball players. You're going to learn bad habits.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be quite to that extreme. I mean, all these guys that are on Colorado's roster are very talented, even if they're walk-ons, but there is drop off in talent from the ones to twos. And yeah. So that's one thing I would like to see change a little bit this offseason.
Well, I'll go back to Coach McCartney again, and he had in every single practice a period that was ones on ones. And more often than not, it was a, what I call a first down period. It was either a red zone period or a first down period. And what I mean by that is you got four downs, man, you know. If the defense stops them, they win. If the offense gets the first down, they win. And there's a consequence to it, you know. And they did that every single day, you know, and the kind of talent on those teams, when you got into the 90s, there's a bunch of NFL guys, and they instilled in them the understanding of toughness and competition and fighting. So I hope that that happens. You know, we don't have any control over whether Coach Prime does that or not. I would assume that Coach Marion would want his offense to go against the best so that when they get to games, they've seen that kind of thing. But I agree with you. We'll hope that that happens.
All right, let's dive back into some of the new transfer additions. We've talked about these guys that I'm scrolling past. And one thing I mentioned, we've mentioned on our last two shows, is we're going to do a circle back on all these guys. And we're going to try to find some new film of them. I'm going to reach out to some people that have covered these guys, and we're going to maybe we'll do our next shows, William, where we kind of break down the new news. We hit a commercial break and then we pick like three or four transfers to talk about each show. Cause I think we really got to dive into these guys more.
Yeah. I think we'll spend some time and do a film room on all of them at some point. Between now and spring ball, I hope.
Yeah. I highlighted Leon Bell here, spent time at Cal, spent time at the junior college ranks as well as Mississippi State in 2023. 6'8", 330, so he's certainly got the size, no concerns there. Gave up some pressure, penalized a few times last year. What do you think about this addition?
Well, I think he's a good addition. I think he's a guy that's got experience at the Power Four level. You know, he wasn't a world beater or All American or anything like that. I think he jumps into the competition at right tackle. I think he can jump into the competition at left tackle. I think he's big enough that you can play him at guard too, for that matter. So, I think we put together an offensive line room where there's a lot of different pieces for those coaches to work with, and you throw them all out there and you see who comes out on top. But you know, Bell, I think what's interesting is, like, we started out this transfer portal season, I guess, and everybody said, well, all we're taking is the lower division guys, the FCS and that kind of thing. And then we're sort of finishing it out with entirely P4 guys, but more of guys that were backups at other places. And so it's interesting to see that happen. But I think Leon Bell is a guy who's played some football at this level. He's got some experience. He's a grown-ass man, 6'8", 330. You know, and I think, I'm going to say again, you know, I said on the board last night, I've said this about 30 times. I guess nobody listens or they got me unignored. But this offense is very offensive line friendly, okay? And where, like a lot of these things talks, like when you talk about offensive linemen in the portal and everything, everybody talks about pass protection as if that's the only part of the game. And pass protection is going to become less of an issue in this offense, because this is not an offense where you drop the quarterback back and give him, you know, have to give him 4 seconds to scan the field. That's not what this offense is. The first thing that you need to be able to do is run block. So I think Bell adds to that group. I think he adds more depth. I think he has more competition, and we'll bring him in here and see what he can do.
All right. Next up, in terms of guys we have not talked about committing to the Buffs yet, I think we're right here. Tamanu Pepe.
Get it the first time, man.
Tamanu Pepe?
That's easy for you to say.
If you just say it fast enough and confidently enough, I guess you can get away with it. Tamanu Pepe. Samu Tamanu Pepe. I'm just going to say it as fast as I can through it, isn't it? He was actually committed to Florida as a transfer and flipped over to Colorado. Yeah. We were talking about size with our last guy. This is even a bigger human being here.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have talked about, do we have the big guys on the defensive line? And we had maybe three or four around a 300-pound level. But I'm going to call him Sammy T. That's going to be my – Sammy T is 6'3",
376. You call him whatever he wants to. He's 376, man.
Hey, from outside the room, I'll call him whatever I want. You know, but he's listed 6'3", 376. I don't have any – knowledge of whether that's accurate or it's a year ago or whatever, but he's been in Power Four football now for what, three seasons? Texas A&M for 2 years and then Baylor for a year, so he's been at the Power Four level, which means he's been, and A&M and Baylor both have significant S&C programs, so I assume he's been working. I would kind of wonder if that 376 isn't an old number that's never been changed, but we'll find out. You know, I guarantee you he's going to come in here with Coach Swayze and run. you know, and if he doesn't want to run, he won't be here for spring ball. So I have a, you look at last year and how many guys totally changed their bodies with Coach Swayze. So I have every confidence that this S&C program will get him to the point where he can run and move. It may not be by spring ball, but I bet it will be by fall. And what I loved is he put up, you know, somebody on the Florida board was talking trash. There was a funny tweet somebody put up. It's like, every team's board about Sammy T was when he's committed to your class, greatest thing that ever lived. When he goes somewhere else, he's a bum that can't play, you know. and then Sammy T put a thing up there. It's about somebody squawking at him about picking Colorado, and he said, well, you know, Coach Pecco was in the league for 15 years and was a gold star captain. And a gold star captain in the NFL means a guy who's been a captain, I think it's 3 years or more, it might be four. He said, that guy's a nose tackle and has been a nose tackle in the NFL for 15 years. I'm a nose tackle. Why would I not want to go learn the game from that guy? You know? So I think, with Coach Swayze and Coach Pecco, he's coming to a situation, and with a comment like that, the other thing that tells me is this guy wants to get better at his game and he wants to improve. And so he's coming to play for a coach he thinks will help him do that, which means he's going to be invested in it. I don't know if he'll be a starter. I don't know if it means this means we're going to a 3-4. He's certainly that 3-4 type of nose guard, but he's certainly going to be a big guy that adds to the competition there in the middle. And again, you know, has been in Power Four for 3 years now with a couple of good programs, and I expect him to come in and make some noise here.
You don't really worry about Sammy T's stats, right? I mean, he's coming in to be a space heater. That's all.
Well, and nobody's asking a guy that's, let's say, a 6'3 and over 340. Nobody's expecting that guy to get into the backfield and make tackles and sack quarterbacks or whatever. The point of a guy like that is to require a double team every single time. Chidoze Nwankwo didn't, you know, run up big stats, but he was hugely important on that defense because he required a double team every single time. And even with a double team, they couldn't move him, you know. So that's what you're hoping for from this guy. He's not going to be the guy with the fancy swim move that gets in the backfield. That's Ezra Christensen, you know. That's Pollard or some of those guys. What you want Sammy T to do is beat up a couple of guys on every single play.
Yeah, and I think back to 2016, Josh Tupou was not quite his size, but he was kind of the unsung hero of that that defense that was had a lot of NFL guys. He was one. He played very long time in the NFL.
And Jordan Carroll benefited from that and got drafted because he got to go one-on-one every single play because Josh Tupou took two or three guys on every single play.
Yep, 100%. All right. Who do we got next on our list that we have not talked about? We've talked about these guys.
Jaden Hardy, or I guess we're moving down.
Yeah, we're down to
everybody else is
Polamodia. Polamodia, I think he's new from Lamar.
Yeah.
Came on campus this past weekend, committed. Unfortunately, Smith Snowden not going to be a Buff. He decided to commit to Michigan. So you've got a lot of guys that are going to be competing in that cornerback room.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, they brought in several guys from Amodia's from Lamar, so he's not from a Power Four, but he's played a lot of football. But what's interesting to me is that all these cornerbacks they brought in, they all look to be about in the 6'2 to 190 range, you know, so got that size that Coach Prime seems to like. And I think Amodia is a guy who's got a lot of confidence and has got some things that he's done on the football field. And that's what they're looking at in the film on this guy. So he's going to be a guy that comes out and is going to have a chip on his shoulder and want to prove something as well. And you throw him into the competition and see where they come out. I see people keep talking about which one's the cornerback number one. Well, I don't know. You know, I don't think we want to name a number one until they earn it. So you throw them out there and let them compete and see who rises to the top. And I think given the wide receivers and the speed, we got a wide receiver, they're going to get tested in practice.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a pretty wide open competition. I think you, Justin Eglin has a lot of experience. And then, you know, Emery Floyd up here, he's got quite a bit of experience. How does that translate stepping up a level? I think Cree Thomas is somebody that I could see coming in and being a starter from day one. But yeah, no, if you could have a Smith Snowden in there, you definitely like to have that surefire guy, you know, all conference guy, which I think they're lacking just in terms of what they've shown so far. Now, could that change possibly?
You know, and Boo Carter's a guy that's got the talent to cover anybody out there too, if you wanted to use him in that situation.
Yeah, Jason Stokes Jr. coming over from Utah, another cornerback. You mentioned that a lot of these guys have size. He's 6'2", 184. He was just a true freshman with the Utes, but he got on the field a little bit and played some special teams, 29 defensive snaps, was very highly regarded coming out of high school. So another guy that is going to be part of that competition. You do bring back R.J. Johnson and Makari Vickers. There's going to be like seven guys competing in that room. And I don't know how much separates some of them.
Every time you say Utes, I think of my cousin Vinny and that judge. Did you say Utes? but yeah, I think you got Preston Ashley, Maurice Williams. I think that'll jump in there and give some reps possibly. So the more guys you got in that cornerback room, the more competition you have, the more depth you have, and the better off you are, I think. So like you said, let's see, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, really, when you think about the two freshmen, 9 guys in that room.
Yeah, I think Preston Ashley would probably be a nickel, I would guess. I have him listed at corner. And then Boo Carter probably, who's listed at safety, probably going to be a nickel as well. So right now you got 17 scholarship guys in that secondary. Maybe one more, but you've actually kind of remade that whole secondary.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that, we all keep talking about, we expect more from the cornerbacks with maybe the best all-time cornerback in history as the head coach. So we'll see if that happens this year.
Jaden Hardy coming in from Oklahoma. He played 26 games there, 221 defensive snaps, 408 special teams plays. Is somebody that was also pretty highly regarded coming out of high school, was an Under Armour All-American with a lot of offers, needed some depth in that secondary. We got another guy to talk about here as well. I think our last show, safety, kind of was the position that scared me the most in terms of depth.
And we've kind of filled that in a little bit with these two guys. And I think now we're talking about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys, not even including the two freshmen coming in. So I think that's Jaden Hardy is a guy, he got some playing time at OU. He's not the biggest safety in history at 5'10", 180, but I think he's going to do a pretty good job for us and give us that competition.
And Jaja Boyd coming in from Indiana. I wonder if his parents were, they couldn't have been fans of Jaja Binks, right? Would that have been about the same, same era of naming him?
You stop and think about it. We got on this team, we got a Juju, we got a JoJo, we got a Jaja, we got a Yaya.
It's great. It's fantastic. We need to keep adding. If there's anything that's close between I'm going to offer this guy or not, you got to go with the name. That's got to be the tiebreaker here.
Right.
He went to Middle Tennessee, and I'm surprised that Jaja Boyd didn't have more Power 4 offers once he hit the portal. That's something that's been asked me the last few days, because he's a pretty talented guy now.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is there some concern that he didn't finish out the season with Indiana? Does that play into it at all? I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he had offers from Boston College, Pitt, Penn State, Virginia Tech, Wake Forest. So, I guess that's out of high school, but I don't know. I don't know what, who the hell knows what anybody's thinking about when they decide whether to offer or not. But I know it was a big point of contention on our board. Why would you leave a team that's about to play for the national championship? Well, if you don't feel a lot of reasons, I don't know what his reasons are, but the reasons why kids transferred are as voluminous as the reasons why kids pick a school in the first place. Maybe you don't feel like you're getting treated fairly there. Maybe you look at the other guys around there and don't think you can compete in that room. I don't know. Maybe Maybe you just don't fit with that secondary coach. You know, who the hell knows? Maybe you don't like the campus. I don't know. So why is he leaving there? That'd be up to him to explain. But at the end of the day, I don't know that it matters all that much. You know, I don't think it's an automatic, bad mark against him for that.
And there is a former Buff, returning Buff, that got placed on scholarship. We'll get on, get into that on the other side of this.
It is Taco Tuesday.
So it really is. It really is perfect timing
for this announcement.
Taco Bell.
They're excited to share that they are officially bringing back
the iconic Quesarito for a limited time. And you know what that means for Denver fans, because Nikola Jokic was drafted by the Denver Nuggets with the 41st pick in the NBA draft. And during this time, the telecast had cut out to commercial, which featured the launch of Taco Bell's Quesarito. So this cemented a legacy connection between Taco Bell and the Joker. And the Joker is now officially tied to the Quesarito. And he's a believer. So if you're a Nuggets fan, a Buffs fan, Taco Bell has been supporting sports across the Front Range. And this is a great way to support your local favorite team. Even better is that Taco Bell has brought back its spicy volcano sauce to pair with the Quesarito to take up the heat another level. So get to Taco Bell and celebrate the Joker and pick up the Volcano Quesarito today. And while you're at it, don't forget to grab something from Taco Bell's crispy chicken menu. It could be a taco, burrito, or strips. Taco Bell's crispy chicken delivers every single time. And with the football playoffs taking full effect, be the hero of the party and don't forget to pick up a crispy chicken game day pack featuring chicken strips, soft tacos, and Taco Bell's amazing nacho fries. This is definitely a winning combination. Live Moss at Taco Bell. And on Taco Tuesday, you can really get bang for your buck with a $7 Supreme Lux box. It's going to come with a beefy five-layer burrito, chicken chalupa Supreme, crunchy taco, and cinnamon twist. I know it's going to be William Gardner's next order when he goes to Taco Bell. Burrito looks pretty solid, man. I need to try that.
Hey, I said we should do a podcast live from Taco Bell. So, you know, I'm
we'll get that done. We will. Now the transfer portal madness is dying down, William, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
We're get a Quesarito. Probably not the volcano one for you, though, huh?
Yeah. And you'll catch me, ask me the question, I'll have a mouthful of food or something. I don't know. Yeah. Hey, one guy, I don't know if we talked about last time, Sean Kenny, the center we brought in.
Okay. I think that was right before we went live, right? I forget. Yeah.
Last time, go ahead. And I want to talk a little bit about him, because I think a lot of people are assuming that Hunter would be the automatic starter at center, or McGill maybe if he came back. But I think people need to take a really solid look at Sean Kenny. He started every game the last two games at Lafayette, which is lower level, but he's also 6'2", 305. And this guy is a wrestler, and I don't mean just a half-ass wrestler. He got a scholarship to Penn State, and Penn State is basically the Alabama of college wrestling. You know, I mean, if you got a college wrestling scholarship there, that's huge. And to be a center at 6'2", 305, and to be that good of a wrestler is a huge deal. It means you understand leverage. It means you understand how to use your hands. It means you're tougher than nails. It means you understand conditioning in a way that most football players will never understand. So I think that Sean Kenny at 6'2", 305, is going to be a guy that people should not just forget about. I think he's going to make a difference in the competition on that offensive line. And as somebody was saying on our board yesterday, or somebody, there was an article somebody copied, we've put together a lot of good pieces in that offensive line room, you know, a lot of guys that can play different positions. So there's no reason why those coaches shouldn't be able to put together a good line that fits with this offense.
You ready for a feel good moment here, William?
Yeah.
All right. Brady Kopek.
You all right?
Why are you jumping in? You tell me you're jumping in, man.
I haven't been in a lot of meetings like this, Coach.
I know. But you know, I got an offer for you. I'm going to look out for you.
I do appreciate
because
that.
You do it. You work your butt off. You bring people together. I have never seen a day that you haven't given it your all. And just your energy. From the time we stretch, from the time we finish, I've never seen you in any confusion on this team. Next year, everybody steps it up. You do everything. And that's what I told those coaches, that he is good, that he can make it together.
That's true.
All right. Well, congratulations. They gave me a scholarship. They see you.
A full goal, coach.
Thank you, coach.
I didn't give you that.
I know that's how it works here. You gotta earn everything. I appreciate that.
And I didn't tell this man about you.
Hey, man, I'm looking forward to working with you, brother. No doubt, man. Congratulations.
I'll say the few times that we've been allowed to watch any practices since Brady Kopetz has been in Boulder, he looks the part, man. Like he's you don't want to build a whole roster with former walk-ons turned scholarship guys, but it's a great story every time it happens. And you know, there probably was not a whole lot of difference makers at that position in the portal.
Well, and I think, you know, Grady Kopetz is he's 6'4", 270, so he's got the size and he's shown what he can do on the field. And I think people are going to say, well, you know, gosh darn it, you know, he's a walk. Some people will never get past those two words, walk on. If the guy plays in the NFL for 10 years, they'll still be talking about he's a walk on, whatever, you know. But, you know, he doesn't have to be. One of the things I think that Coach Prime talked about, and I think one of the things that meant something to me in that video was our new tight ends coach, and I'm blanking his name. Help me out here. What?
Nip it.
Yeah, was sitting in on that meeting. So clearly he had weighed in on this and watched some film on the kid. But when Coach Prime talked about, you know, you're a guy that raises other guys up and you're a good influence on in the locker room and in practice, you need those guys glue. You know, you said you're glue and you need those glue guys on your team. People talk about culture. This is how, one of the ways you get it, you know, by bringing these guys around. Brady Kopetz was in the portal, you know, and they decided they wanted him still here, you know. So I view him almost as a portal pickup at tight end. Some people will say he sucks because he was a walk-on. Well, okay, that's your opinion. We'll see what he does. I think clearly, you know, Coach Marion probably had an input on this as far as him in that offense and what have you. So I think it's good for the program. I think it's adds more depth in that tight end room, and we'll see what he does.
Yeah, no doubt. Based on what you've seen from this offense, do they have what it takes at the tight end position to be able to execute what they want to offensively in this system?
Yes, absolutely. It doesn't require, you know, all world tight ends, first round NFL draft picks or anything like that. It requires a guy first and foremost who can block and who's also a receiving threat. Now, when I say receiving threat, I don't mean, you know, he can go 40 yards down the field and not run all the safeties. First of all, he's got to understand the offense, because a lot of times when they throw the tight end, they've set up a situation where you've got this, maybe the safeties and the linebackers are charging up on the run and you pop that tight end back behind them. And so you got to be sure-handed, got to be able to block, things like that. So I think that, you know, the guys we've got, and let me take a look here real quick. I think
you know who's going to be one of the hardest guys to rank on our top 40 Buffs countdown this year? I think it's going to be Zach Atkins,
yeah. And we'll
see. He could be high on that list. He could be low on that list. There's a lot of different interpretations of expecting or in terms of projecting what to expect in 26.
Well, we'll have all the spring practices to sort of see how the tight end fits into that offense and if they do and what Zach Atkins does, what Kopetz does. You know, what Fisher Clemens does, what the two rising sophomores or redshirt freshman Lazier and D'Souza do, you know. So we'll have some practice to support what we think is going to happen with that position. But and I take it that Savelle Smalls is out of the picture now.
Well, here's the thing is you've got these different rulings that are just not being decided. There's some guys in limbo. There's got to be a point now, especially with the coaches coming out at the coaches convention saying that they're maybe going to concede to a 9-game redshirt rule. And then you've got these other JUCO rulings that are kind of up in the air. Kareem Harden doesn't really know what his future is. But for guys like McGill and Savelle Smalls, it probably doesn't look great right now. And I don't understand the pushback from commissioners in terms of this redshirting ruling. It makes too much sense to go 5 for 5. It's just so much simpler. If you have, I don't know, if you miss the majority of 2 seasons, which would be less than 6 regular season games in that 5-year stretch, then you can apply for a medical redshirt. It just gets approved. You don't have to have this indecision. There needs to be more clear-cut guidelines of what all entails a medical hardship, and go 5 for 5. At the most, these guys should at the most be in college for 6 years.
Yeah. But I think, getting back to the
top, it's like, what are we doing?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things that got to be decided and fixed in college football right now. But, you know, I think in terms of the tight end position, we'll have 5 guys for sure. In there, it looks like maybe Savelle Smalls. And then, quite frankly, the portal's closed to entry, but there's still a lot of guys, still like 6,000 guys in the portal. So maybe they still find somebody who can add.
There'll be graduate transfers in May as well. Yeah. You can't bank on that anymore, right? Like,
no, you can't bank on it.
Even in the past, like banking on the spring scholarship window was kind of a crapshoot because.
Well, I'm not banking on it. I'm just saying that it's a possibility that we could add somebody to that room between and fall camp. So, I think the other thing is that given our lack of usage of the tight end for the last 306 years, that, we have to prove that we're going to use the tight end before anybody's going to come here and play the damn thing for us.
Yeah. Josh Niblett, that should be a fun experience to kind of watch him mold that group, because he obviously uber talented coach, so much success at the high school level, great chemistry with Coach Prime. The tight ends coach from a couple of years ago blocked me on Twitter because I said that Josh Niblett seems like a more stable version of him, and he didn't like that. So
Well, anyway, so
do the math there. Come on.
Well, I didn't hear the whole comment what you said, but I think Niblett is a high intensity coach, and he's going to pass that on not only to the tight ends but to other players on offense and to some extent to the whole team, so he's going to be a high intensity guy. He's going to demand excellence from that tight end position. I think he's going to be great for Atkins. And I think he'll get the most out of, all the rest of those guys than anybody can do. He's an entirely different kind of coach than Bartoloni. And I think that, you mean Mr. Stand Up, Sit Down?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. People on the chat are probably like, what the hell are they talking about? But other people will get it. But I think that Josh Niblett adds a huge impact to this team. And I think along, with Coach Marv and Coach Marion, that's part of rebuilding the coaching staff, and is going to address the issue that people keep bringing up about culture and what have you. But I expect more things from that tight end room with him as their coach.
We have a high school edition to talk about. And William, I don't want to go too in depth on this because we got 4 guys for the regular signing period that we're going to break down their film of. But North Dallas running back Cam Newton has been added to Colorado's 2026 prep class, and very productive player at the high school level. 6,176 all-purpose yards and 91 touchdowns over 36 varsity games at Walnut Grove High School in Prosper, Texas. Yes, high school stats can you don't want to bank everything on them, but this is a very highly productive guy, somebody that Brennan Marion recruited. He came out to Boulder. He was the MVP of the All-American Bowl, which is now the Military Appreciation Bowl. Any thoughts here as far as a guy adding to the mix? I think running back's one of those spots, William, where You can expect, especially a true freshman like this that has been a kind of a workhorse at the high school level, to be able to come in there and be a, at the very worst, a depth piece from day one. At best, you know, somebody that can kind of challenge for some meaningful game reps.
Yeah, and he's got, from what I've seen, he's got great speed. He's got vision. You know, he's shifty and makes things happen. He's 5'9", 185, which may not sound big to most people, but 185 is pretty thick on a 5'9 frame, and I think he'll just get better. I think Bieniemy started out as a freshman at 5'9", 185, something like that. But I think that he adds to that running back room. And again, you know, this is a guy I think that Coach Marion specifically chose, probably went looking for more running backs and chose this kid to be part of his offense because of the skill set he brings to the table. So, you know, I expect him to be part of that offensive rotation and be in the mix there, you know. So I also think this gives us so we'll have 1, 2, 4, 5, 6 scholarship guys, which gives us more depth now to really mm-hmm. play around and see who can do what, you know. I think Cam Newton is a little bit different than anybody else in that room right now. You know, he's got more true running back, I think, than DeKalen Taylor, but not as much speed, nearly as not as big as Micah Welch yet. But I think there's a lot of different. I think we have 6 running backs that all bring a different thing to the table, and so I think Brennan Marion is the perfect guy to put that to use.
Do you think that Cam Michael wishes he hadn't hit the portal? He's going to Georgia Southern. I really felt like he could have been a difference maker in this offense.
Well, it's hard to know. I mean, again, we don't know the 100% the reasons why he decided to leave or you know, what was his problem with staying here or whatever. I think this offense would have been great for him. I think, you know, at some point.
Even Draylon Miller, man. Like,
yeah.
Him too.
Yeah. Would. I think this would have been great for both of those guys. You know, I don't know, Cam Michael dropping down the level is interesting. You know, we can talk about where some of these guys wound up, you know, but without speaking to myself and ask, you know, getting a solid answer as to why they're leaving, you know, a lot of it's speculation, you know.
Ryan Staub and Isaiah Harge are headed to Tennessee.
Yeah.
They're going to both land in the SEC. Those are two guys I think that most Buffs fans will be cheering for in the future. It's not going to – I mean, Ryan Staub is going to be a second or third string quarterback there. Isaiah Harge is going to be a guy that's going to be able to probably do some of the stuff he did at Colorado. It would have been nice to have him. But I think those guys exemplified what it's like – what Colorado fans want their players to exemplify while they're in Boulder. And they did that. And, you know, if they need another spot – there's some guys you have mixed feelings about. We'll get into Jordan Seaton for a second. I don't know how much time you want to spend on that again this week, but
yeah, I want to talk about Zahir Young before we move on to that. But
we're going back to that. Sorry, I'm kind of jumping around here a little bit.
I think that Ryan Staub indicates clearly the importance of backup quarterbacks to other teams. You know, all the places mm-hmm. that wooed him and asked him to come visit. Clearly weren't looking for a starter, I don't think. But it just shows you the importance of having that guy on the bench that you know you can go to in an emergency, you know. And I have to admit, I was surprised. I thought he'd drop down a level, to be honest with you.
I kind of wanted him to start selfishly just because I like the young man. I want him to be able to play football, you know.
Yeah, you know, and so I don't know. You look at some of these guys and where they wound up, and it's going to be interesting that, you know, like Carter Stoudemire at Arkansas. I'll be watching that because I'm curious, you know, mm-hmm. will he be better there at that in the SEC? We'll see. I don't know, you know.
Teon Parks is going to TCU. I don't think any of us know what to make out of this guy at this point. He's just he's an early mercenary. Like, he's only been in college for like a year and he's already been at 3 places.
Yeah, and I don't know. We're talking about some guy. I can't remember who it was who came to visit CU, I think, or had an offer from us or whatever, and had
not Teon Parks. I'm sorry, I'm confusing him. Yeah. He played more for CU last year. I actually would have kept him in that room if I could have.
Yeah, I think he provides depth and whatever. But I was looking at some guy in the last couple of weeks who you know, has been in college 5 years and has been at like 6 or 7 different places.
Yep. Yep. And then what else is there? Montrez Walker going to Alabama, Birmingham. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
He should do well at that level. It's a different day and age. Like, I feel like Montrez Walker would have been a really, really good linebacker 20 years ago at this level. It's just the game has evolved a little bit away from kind of his skill set in that role.
Yeah, the tackle inside linebacker is kind of, well, I don't know, there's still a place for it, but you got to have some ability to get out there and get to the sidelines and get in coverage or what have you.
And to correct myself, Noah King is the person that, I don't know why I was confusing him with TM Parks. I think 3 weeks of portal madness is scrambling the brain a little bit. But yeah, well, those are the guys. Yeah, go ahead.
I think there's so many names on the mind now, and you know, and in 42, I think guys that are incoming that we need to learn about and whatever. I think our brains are all kind of overloaded with names or whatever and trying to figure it all out, to be honest with you. But I think it's exciting to me. We'll get to Zahir Young, but in a larger sense, I think a lot of people started out with skepticism that Coach Prime and this staff would be able to fill this team up, and by God, they did.
Oh yeah. And
it remains to be seen how they come together as a team and how they play, but they didn't just bring in a bunch of chumps, man. They filled every position with the odd exception of tight end, in my view. They brought in guys, even a quarterback, they brought in two guys that I think are going to be significant, you know, backups or whatever. Isaac Wilson and Keneal Sweetwine, even as a freshman, I think is a guy that can give us snaps, and with Ponder, he can be our scout team guys if that's where he winds up. But I'm looking down here in every single position outside of tight end really added some guys, man. You know, and so we'll see how it all plays out. And I don't think we're done. You know, we talked a little bit, you know, I don't think I saw a tweet, I think, from somebody inside the program saying we're not done. Like, you know, there's a defensive tackle I like a lot, Deverick Woods, 6'2", 290, who visited. And mm-hmm. I'd like to add him, because another 300-pounder in the middle of that defensive line I would like to have. I'd like to see another linebacker jump on board if we can find something. But I'm very impressed with the number and the quality of the guys we brought in. Quite frankly, you know, I have to admit, a month ago, you know, when I look at this chart and there's no defensive tackles listed,
yeah,
I was a little worried, man.
How could you not be, right? But
yeah,
it is kind of reconditioning yourself and to 26 and what it's like to be a college football fan in this era. It's totally different. I've been sometimes retweeting where other Colorado Buffs end up transferring to, and it gets under some people's skin, but I'm going to tell you, if you're going to be a college football fan going forward, you can't let that stuff get under your skin. Like, this is a different era.
And there's also been, you know, debate about whether you can build a team, you know, with transfers or not, and that still remains to be seen. There's not enough information, not enough years under this new situation yet. But I think there's evidence to show that you can develop. You know, several of those teams and went far in the playoffs had quite a few transfers, including Indiana. But
Oklahoma State is like completely
entire
roster.
West Virginia?
It's not like this is a Colorado specific thing. It really is not.
Right. You know, and it's really kind of been across the board. And I don't know if it'll slow down next year, because I tell you, you know, there's a lot of guys who gave up their spots in football, ain't got a spot yet.
Yeah.
You know, and so maybe that's a learning thing for guys next year. Keep what you got rather than going out. And I think the other thing that was obvious in the last month or so, there's a lot of unscrupulous sons of bitches out there lying to kids about what their value is. Mm-hmm. And that's too bad as well.
Yeah. Just stay out of it, man. Like if you're not well versed in this aspect of life, then do not give bad advice. That is part of what is really tough, William, is that some of these young men are getting really bad advice. And
yeah,
it's not their fault. They're 18, 19, 20, 21 years old. Like, we've both said many times on the podcast before, we were idiots at that age. Like, you gotta learn, and you need the right people guiding you. And so that part of it is definitely disappointing. And that's part of why, like, you know, 20 years ago, had the NCAA just did the right thing and bumped up these stipends, full cost of attendance, right from the get-go, you in setting up, financial classes and making maybe some of these players invest a certain percentage into their future. There were so many things they could have done for these people back then, and now it's just too late.
Yeah, and it'll see. We'll see how it develops, and I think we'll start to see this year, you know, what teams can do with large amounts of transfers or whatever. But I want to address there's a question on the board. If I'm going to throw this up here, if you don't mind, but I don't know if I can make it work or not. Maybe it might have to be you, but Scobuff.
Who's it from?
Scobuffs 26 asks, what are they doing outside of the weight room and such to build that camaraderie and leadership? I think that's a really good question. And I would start with not having the coach have cancer, because I think it makes a big damn difference to have Coach Prime around through the summer or whatever. But before 2024, one of the things they did, for example, was they had a leadership retreat at some retreat up in the mountains, and they took a bunch of kids they identified as potential leaders, and they went through a whole program with them. And I think it made a big difference, you know, and I think that's the sort of thing that we missed out on with Coach Prime being so sick last year. But I think that with this new coaching staff and such, certainly the first part of building a team is always going to be the hard work that you do together, you know. So working with Coach Swayze in the weight room, and I think they're already started, but that's part of it. And then I don't know, I haven't heard specifically the things they're going to do, but I expect it to be more like that off season before 2024, when they really do have things that they specifically do to build that sort of team with all the new guys.
Seemed like the swimming pool exercise there really brought them together two off seasons ago. Do you remember watching that video? That was pretty funny.
I don't think those guys tried to.
Some of them were like dolphins. Some of them were definitely not comfortable in the water. It genuinely like seemed to like kind of push them to. And they've done this with the men's basketball program at CU as well, with the Navy SEALs of some of that stuff really. It does help kind of bring you together, especially when you don't know these guys that well, but that stuff can make you get to know somebody. It's kind of like you go on the first road trip with your girlfriend. You're going to know a whole lot more about her. She's going to know a whole lot more about you after that 48 hours or however long that road trip is versus, you know, standard date night. So
I think
kind of pushing them to the limits is good.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be a lot more focus on that. And I think they also focused more on bringing in, like, one, you know, like Shane Coakes is a guy I always go back to as a guy they brought in who was not only a damn good football player, but was, you know, super highly, you know, he had a degree from Dartmouth, for God's sakes. They wouldn't even let me be a janitor at Dartmouth, but he was a leader from day one, you know, and I think they went out and got guys like that, like Gideon Lampron and other guys like that. Who are going to come in and instead of being like me, trying to build more team and working together and whatever. So I do think that's a good question. And I think that there'll be a lot more focus on that this year. I don't know what the specifics of it will be. But I think he's got, you know, I think he's got a staff now with Marion and Marv and Niblett who fit into the mold of doing those kinds of things.
All right, we've almost got an hour, but we've got a few more topics we've got to get into. Zahir Young, a new JUCO offensive line target. We've got to talk about remaining needs. Chris Hudson joining the College Football Hall of Fame, and then we'll see if we even want to talk about Jordan Seaton on this, where he might end up. You got 10 more minutes in your calendar there, William?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right.
We'll be right back.
What's that? Is your business growing but not quite ready for a full-time CFO? Macaulay Capital offers fractional CFO services for companies doing more than $3 million in annual revenue. You get expert financial leadership without the full cost. Learn more about how you can improve your business's profitability and cash management at MacaulayCapital.com. If you know Boulder, you know the Hungry Toad. We've been serving this town since 1991, long before the lines on Pearl Street. Just north of campus, we're your local British pub with proper fish and chips, quality burgers, a scratch kitchen, real English cask ale, and no tourist fluff. We support CU football, women's soccer, and the loyal fans,
who keep it local.
The Hungry Toad.
Boulder born.
Buffs proud. All right. Love our sponsors. Hungry Toad. Say this, I think, every week. We got to get back there soon. We got to definitely maybe have a BuffStampede.com meetup before spring ball at some point.
Yeah, that'd be fun to get people out there and put some faces to names and stuff. But there's also another question in there at the bottom asking about, is this offense too gimmicky? And I would address that and say, I don't think it's a gimmick at all, quite frankly. I think it's based on solid principles. It's based on things that I've talked about for years, it's essentially a new version of a triple option. But the option is sometimes a pass. I think it's based out of zone blocking principles. It's been highly effective. The question asked about the fact that the team was 7-5, but I think there's a lot more to the final record than just the offense. The offense has been prolific in terms of yards and points scored everywhere it's been. So I think it's not a gimmick at all. I think it's legit. So one of the things, and without having a whiteboard or, I don't know what they call it now, the telestrator or whatever, to be able to sort of diagram it up there, it's hard to explain this, but what you want from an offense is every play has two or three different options often, you do everything possible. So like you hand off to the running back and then the quarterback continues on as if he's going to do a pitch option or whatever, right? And up in the booth, you're watching what the defense does to that, and if they don't honor all of those different things, and you come back with the same play and do the other thing, so it's really based on solid principles of offensive football. And I think it's a legit offense, and I don't see that anybody's stopped it yet. I don't know that it's been done at this level. Was he at Texas A&M or
Texas Longhorns? And then he was also with Pittsburgh as
So he's been at Power Four and understands what kind of defense you see at this level. So I don't think it's a gimmick at all. I think it's an exciting offense. I think you're gonna like it.
All right, Buffaloes have thrown their hat in the ring for a junior college offensive lineman, Zahir Young. Thoughts here? I always just when it's an old lineman, William, I'm just kicking it over to you. What are your thoughts here?
Well, I like him a lot. I think he's got 3 years to play three, I believe, and he's 6'5", 290, and what really strikes me is he's really skinny at 290, so he's got lots of room to add weight. But I watched some of his film from where he was last year, and he's raw as an offensive tackle, but my God, he plays mean and physical, and he's basically a pancake machine. He's very nimble, got really great feet. To me, he's the kind of guy, with 3 years left, you bring him in, and I don't know that he'll be instantly in the mix, but if we can keep him here a couple of years, I think he could be very, very solid. Get him in the weight room, and I think he'll be 3'10" before too long. Got great length, uses his hands really well. So I think that he's a guy that's a great addition. If we can get, he hadn't committed to us yet, but hopefully he's a guy that will pick us and come in here and be another piece in that offensive line room that I think gives us some opportunities. I think he's a guy who could play either tackle up at this level once he gets his feet on the ground here.
The last three shows since the portal opened, we've talked about remaining needs. There are a lot less remaining needs now, William. The title of the show is they really have had a complete roster makeover now. We've talked about it. I think you need another arm in this room. It doesn't have to be necessarily a scholarship one, but a talented walk-on arm. And, quarterback might be one of those positions that actually is fun to practice football at because you just get to sling around. So I think you should be able to bring in a walk-on there. Running back, if you could pull in another guy, that'd be great, but you're probably okay there. Yeah. Do you think they need seven scholarship guys there?
No, I think they look good. You know, if you've got a world, you know, top of the line guy, I don't think those guys are, any of those are still left, but I think I like the six that we got in there.
10 receivers and DeAndre Moore Jr. Being part of that mix, Joseph Williams, Danny Scordero. I mean, they got some talent there.
On a larger level, you know, I wanted to mention, you know, like we brought in a bunch of guys who've done a lot at various levels. And then we brought in a couple of huge headliners in DeAndre Moore and Bo Carter, you know, and so we've got the big name guys as well as everything else. But I'd like to see another tight end if possible. And then looking at the offensive line, one guy we didn't talk about is Javon McFadden. Now, that's a weird situation, being that he's the cousin of he who shall not be named and came here from Ohio State. But, you know, he's a kid at basically 6'3", 300, was an 89 rated three-star guy, picked Ohio State out of high school. By comparison, Chauncey Gooden, who's been at CU for a year now, was a 92 rated four-star, but so he's very similar. McFadden, I think Chauncey Gooden's ahead of McFadden right now in his development, but I think Javon McFadden is a very exciting guy to add to that offensive line. You know, he spent a year at Ohio State, so he's been taught right, been in a good weight program. So he, along with Chauncey Gooden, should both be in the mix for the guard position. But I look at that offensive line, I feel pretty good about who all we brought in here at all five spots. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 with the freshmen, 15 guys on scholarship for the fall with the freshmen. And that's enough to run your practices and run your scout team and things like that. So I feel good about it. I think we got some guys on there that can really play. I think we're going to have some heated battles for positions. Couldn't tell you who's going to be that left tackle yet, but it's going to be a fight to earn it. You know, I think Yaya Atia is one of the best players we got out there with a lot of experience. And then some of the guys we brought in are exciting to me as well. Jose Soto's played a lot of games in this offense, so, you know, maybe that gives him an advantage. I don't know, but I think that offensive line looks pretty good room to me if those coaches can put it together.
You mentioned Jordan Seaton. Do we talk about him anymore? Like, what's the protocol going forward?
No, he's gone. I don't care where he winds up. You know,
it sounded most likely at the time of recording this, LSU. You had Mississippi State, Miami, Oregon, Texas, also in the mix. I was worried though when I heard that he lined up a visit to Oregon, William. I was like, William might lose it on this one. I honestly don't care.
You know, I mean, okay. I don't. You know, you've heard a lot of sounds.
I'm not trying to poke you, but
I honestly don't care where these guys. Once you decide to transfer, you're not a Buff to me anymore. And I follow CU football, you know, so I don't go where you want to go. I mean, he's going to be in the spotlight for a long time. From what I hear, he's burned some bridges. I don't know the specifics of it, so I probably shouldn't talk about the guy. And I don't know. Good luck to you, man. You know, I hope it works out for you. I think he got some bad advice as well, but I don't think one offensive lineman, no matter how good they are, is worth the kind of money they're paying for him. Unless you've already got the whole championship level team. If you're Miami and you need a left tackle, fine. I get it.
If that's the one missing piece. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I gotcha.
For that one missing piece. But for us, you know, we're trying to get the bowl eligibility and I think we got a good shot at it. You know, putting that much into one guy. Now, you know, if he was the top wide receiver in the country, maybe it's different, you know, running back, somebody.
I feel like for that price tag, you got to be like a Heisman level person.
Travis Hunter. Yeah. You know, right. Yeah. You know, yeah. And there's no offensive, and I love offensive linemen, man, but I'm realistic about the position is five dudes playing together. Right. And you can do a lot with five dudes who are not NFL draft picks. So to spend that kind of money on an offensive tackle, especially in a non-passing offense, it just doesn't make any sense to me. So good luck to him. I don't want to talk about him anymore.
And that'll be the last time we talk about Jordan Seaton on the show, unless there's some other reason for us to. Let's move to the defense. You've got 8 defensive tackles now on the roster. You know, some of these guys are going to play different techniques. So it's kind of, I label it as defensive line. So you got some different techniques going on with these different guys, some different skill sets. Overall, though, like you mentioned, that this list was at zero at one point, right. Not too long ago.
And now you got two names in there you can't say because they got too many letters in them. And then you got a mix of size. I think Ezra Christensen is a guy that people don't understand quite how good he is. I think he's going to be Shane Coates with much more talent. Santana Hopper possibly as well. Like I said earlier, Deverick Woods is a guy that we've offered and had in on a visit at 6'2", 290. I would like to add him to that room because, quite frankly, you can never have enough. But that's a decent-looking group of dudes. We got the big guys, and you know, we got the more athletic guys, a little bit of everything. Eight guys, one of whom is freshman Joe Pecco, who I think is going to be very close, if not already there, ready to contribute this year. So I wouldn't mind seeing one more big defensive tackle.
Yeah, because that's a position that rotates really more than any on a football team. You probably are going to have, what, five or six guys part of a rotation in a given game. And so being at eight right now, you're banking on all those guys to or the majority of them to live up to expectations and stay healthy. And we saw this past year how quickly that can kind of go the other way.
Right. And edge, I think, is, you know, I think I like the room we got there. It wouldn't surprise me if another edge came in, seeing as how we targeted about 50 of them. I really hope that Quincy Wiggins can stay at edge this year, because in those first couple of games when he was at edge, he was pretty dominant. You know, and asking him to play the three or the one techniques is not his game, you know. So I hope he gets a chance to stay out there and really shows. I still think he's a top talent, you know, and a next level guy. So between him and all the guys we brought in, I think we've got a pretty solid edge room. But again, I wouldn't surprise me, you know. I'm trying to look at I don't know if we're still looking at David Onowuha or any of those other guys. Wouldn't surprise me to see another edge guy, because again, that's another room where you can play some guys. Although, you know, in 24, when we were doing really well on offense, I think we played about four guys. You know, we had a rotation of about four guys, and I think that works really well. Figure out your two top guys. What we need is a BJ Green guy type of guy who can dominate as a pass rusher, but also be very solid against the run. I don't know which of those guys on that list right now will be that guy. I hope one of them is. Might be Quincy Wiggins, because he's got the size for it. So we'll see.
This seven number in terms of scholarship linebackers is fine if you think that Kylan Salter's made some strides and you're confident that one or two of these freshmen can play. If not, you probably want a little bit more depth there.
Right. I think you need all four of those upperclassmen guys to pan out, you know, and not be, you know, Christ, if two of them are busts like last year, you know, now you maybe got a problem. But if they all pan out, you're looking pretty good. And again, I still think Carson Crawford and Rodney Colton will be ready to play at least a little bit, at least in situations, you know. But I would like to see another inside linebacker or two, if you can find any out there that are worth picking up at this point in time.
We talked about the secondary, 17 scholarship guys between cornerback and safety. Their first commit for 2027 is from cornerback Dolph McDonald. He's not part of that number because he's not going to be on campus this last year. Some interchangeable parts. I mentioned Preston Ashley's probably going to be a nickelback, Boo Carter as well. Anything you can kind of add at this point in the secondary would be gravy. You would have loved to have gotten the Smith Snowden. You know, this is the NIL era, and sometimes you're going to lose out to a Michigan. If you're Colorado, you can hate it. It is what it is. You can overcome it. If you evaluate right, we'll see if they do. The jury's going to be out on that.
And how they develop them and how well they play, it will be a big thing as well. But, you know, the word from coming out of the insiders and inside the program is they're not done. So I think some names will be added somewhere on this chart, you know, and we'll see what that is. And You know, the thing is, you know, there's been a rush to get guys in right away so they can do spring ball, but we can add guys all the way up until fall camp, you know, for next year. So we may see four or five guys between now and then.
Let's finish off the show with another feel-good thing here. Chris Hudson set to be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. He's going to be the 13th Buff to be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. And this comes just a couple years after Dion Figures said, I hope Chris Wilson will be next. He's my little brother. Any memories about Chris Hudson and what he did during his time with the Buffaloes?
Well, you know, he his time was 91 to 94, which is right when I left to go into Navy. So I didn't have the first hand with him that I had with Figures and some of those other guys. But he was such a dominant defensive back. You know, he played cornerback. He played, I think he started out his first 2 years predominantly a cornerback and then moved to safety and was so dominant. You know, he was a third round NFL pick. It's kind of interesting. You know, I just looked at the Thorpe Award, and 2 years before him, Dion Figures won it, and then he won it. The next year, a guy, Greg Myers from Colorado State, won it. So 3 out of 4 years that Thorpe Award came here to this state. But Chris Hudson was a great teammate and a great guy, and everything I've ever heard about him is positive, and went on to have a pretty solid NFL career. So I think it's exciting. It's good for us to have a guy on that list again. I think it, you know, goes to show the kind of talent we had in this program, you know, in the first half of the 90s. You know, I think that 94 team almost
– Everybody says that's the most talented CU team.
Well, I think every starter got drafted eventually.
Wow.
On 94.
That's crazy.
Team. And that team only lost that one game when Cordell Stewart had a bad day at Nebraska, you know. So we came back and kicked Notre Dame's green backside in a bowl game, as I recall. But Chris Hudson was just an awesome, outstanding defensive back and a good person, you know. And, you know, back then, like Matty Russell won the Butkus and Al Williams won the Butkus. And so – we were scraping up those awards left and right at that time, you know?
Yeah. You've got like that era of the wing of the legacy hallway with all those trophies. And now you've got the Travis Hunter area of that room now, because he brought so much hardware home last year. So hopefully we can, instead of just these chunks of time, we can, enjoy some like sustained success around Colorado. That'd be fun.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Have a little bit of, you know, let's start with back-to-back bowl seasons. That'd be
nice. Start there. Yeah.
My God. I mean, it's been how long? It's so crazy.
04 and 05, man. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Two decades ago.
And that's six wins is not a high hurdle, for God's sakes. You know,
it's not okay. It's not okay.
Yeah.
It just isn't. But congrats to Chris Hudson. And this was a fun show, William. Like I said earlier, we're going to dive back into so many of these guys. We're going to have so much fun delving into that. We're just keeping our heads above water until this. And it's starting to kind of slow down a little bit. You know, it's not like 3-4 commits every day. It's like one every other day, or, you know, it's starting to slow down a little bit. So
we're
starting to get a feel for this roster. And we're trying to break it down, and this is one of my favorite things, William, is just to kind of break down personnel with you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there was a little – somebody asked about, is 7 wins a possibility? It's way too early to even think about. I got to see what they do in spring ball and how they come together, and I want to see that Brandon Marion's offense with my own two lion eyes and lots of different things I want to see before I start talking about you know, possible records next year. But I think, I don't know, this is the time of year when anything's possible, man. If you can't find some optimism this time of year, maybe you need to go fishing or pick a new hobby, because this is the time of year to have that optimism and feel good.
Yeah. And like I said, tomorrow the scheduled dates and opponents will be released. We do know that Colorado is going to have 2 of their 3 non-conference games played on the road at Georgia Tech and at Northwestern. So it's not going to be an easy start to the season, but it's not like, you know, with Haynes King moving on, it's not like those are definitely, you're chalking them up as L's. So We'll see, but it's going to be a tough schedule. So we'll get kind of our reaction into the schedule next week, William. And I'm sure we'll have a few more guys to talk about joining the herd as recent history has suggested.
Yeah, for sure. So it'd be fun, exciting.
All right. Appreciate everybody out there for tuning in. We'll be back before you. It is Taco Tuesday, so it really is perfect timing for this announcement. Taco Bell, they're excited to share that they are officially bringing back the iconic Quesarito for a limited time. And you know what that means for Denver fans, because Nikola Jokic was drafted by the Denver Nuggets with the 41st pick in the NBA draft. And during this time, the telecast had cut out to commercial, which featured the launch of Taco Bell's Quesarito. So this cemented a legacy connection between Taco Bell and the Joker. And the Joker is now officially tied to the Quesarito. And he's a believer. So if you're a Nuggets fan, a Buffs fan, Taco Bell has been supporting sports across the Front Range. And this is a great way to support your local favorite team. Even better is that Taco Bell has brought back its spicy volcano sauce to pair with the Quesarito to take up the heat another level. So get to Taco Bell and celebrate the Joker and pick up the Volcano Quesarito today. And while you're at it, don't forget to grab something from Taco Bell's crispy chicken menu. It could be a taco, burrito, or strips. Taco Bell's crispy chicken delivers every single time. And with the football playoffs taking full effect, be the hero of the party, and don't forget to pick up a crispy chicken game day pack featuring chicken strips, soft tacos, and Taco Bell's amazing nacho fries. This is definitely a winning combination. Live Moss at Taco Bell. And on Taco Tuesday, you can really get bang for your buck with a $7 Supreme Lux box. It's going to come with a beefy five-layer burrito, chicken chalupa Supreme, crunchy taco, and cinnamon twist. I know it's going to be William Gardner's next order when he goes to Taco Bell.